Will he tip the card?
I know I've said it before, but given the series of events that leads me into your studio today, Michael, I think there is something happening. There's something in the air.
We'll tip the card here. I'll tip the card this weekend.
Nick Sharkey joins Racing Pulse to preview the big races in Friday Form Focus.
Seems like there's always big races. The 4 weeks of the Adelaide Carnival has come and gone, but now we shift our attention to a really interesting race meeting in Brisbane as I introduce the Shark. How are you, Shark?
Good, Matthew. How are you?
Good.
Take five from Matty Kamani this morning.
Don't you start.
Very classy unit, isn't he?
I imagine him in a sort of a dinner suit, tapping away to it, yeah. in a smoky jazz sort bar of, in
yeah,
the Soho.
Exactly, just a little martini perhaps in hand.
A little vodka martini. Yeah. And a couple of likely types at the bar as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely, just regaling them with tales of old, yeah.
Now, actually, we'll talk about the significance of Eagle Farm and the significance of Canaan shortly, but the significance of Matt Kamani's favourite tune brings us to your homework.
Yeah.
Everyone's getting homework now. Chris Waller's got homework, and God knows what he's going to come up with his favourite tune. The reason we're doing this is that Mikey Valisaris and I randomly decided to play half a Pink Floyd song yesterday.
I heard that. And
it got everyone feeling really funky. So that's the mood as we sort of claw our way of coronavirus. So your homework, and this will reveal a lot to our listeners about the inner shark. So what have you got for us?
We've got a bit of TV on the radio, Matty.
Righto, Phil.
Sort of like a Brooklyn art rock band. A bit grimy.
Okay, Phil. Sounds like the song that would
it's
be
niche.
Not attached to a clean living type of guy.
It's actually kind of like, the lyrics are pretty cool. It's kind of touches on a whole werewolf angle and a really passionate sort of love affair that shouldn't be happening sort of situation. It's a bit grimy.
Very grimy.
Gets a blood pumping, man.
Well, but when you're doing your form, you know, when you're sort of doing the midnight, burning the midnight oil, trying to find a winner at Flemington and Eagle Farm, well, listeners, let us know what you think that tells us about Michael Sharkey. What it'll also tell us a bit about Sharkey is his ability to find us one on the weekend. And having a chat to Chris, well, I think every weekend how there's a horse that everyone's watching the clock and everyone's going to watch that horse go around for whatever reason. And there's probably two or three, and one or two of them it's certainly at Flemington. But the intrigue around Canaan is intriguing, isn't it? Because of the money they knock back, the risk of not taking the money and racing on to try and recoup or justify that decision. And the first stepping stone towards that is going to be in the Gunsind at Eagle Farm on tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I think it's fair to say you'd expect him to go and win, regardless of drawing a very wide gate. He's got more natural ability than anything in that field. Funny, we often see that progression towards the Queensland Derby, which we don't have this year, with a lot of lightly race stayers, young stayers that are going through it. Most of these in the field are fairly exposed. They've had sort of 10, 12 starts. And
you reckon it's an easy
race.
Kill for him, do you?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I think he should just go and knock that over, to be honest. He looks a standout to me.
Just going through Tony Gollan's runners to see if he indeed has a runner in that race. No, he doesn't.
That's why I'm rather flippant in regards to the opposition. I didn't want to incur the wrath of T. Gollan straight off the lid.
He used to be a pretty serious rugby player, T. Gollan.
Did he?
So you wouldn't want to, T. McAvoy and T. Gollan, I wouldn't mind seeing it go to the wire.
T. McAvoy?
Yeah, I'll get Gollan's view in a minute. He's about to join us, but first I want to play an excerpt from Robbie Heathcote yesterday to set the scene for this really, really interesting big two-year-old race up there tomorrow.
Ross Fires, the Tiger Horse, has me equally excited. But I'm going into this race on Saturday, and Tony Gollan's no deal, and if he thinks Isotope could beat me, then there's every chance it probably can, and throw in Wild Ruler from the Snowden camp. They're bringing this Schnitzel Blue Blood up with an air of confidence about them that they could win the JJ Atkins. So I'm going into the race on Saturday optimistic my lad will run well, but a little unsure if he can go to that next level so soon.
Well, thank God Robert Heath could introduce that by saying Tony Gollan is no dill. So that must be encouraging for Tony as he joins us. G'day, Tony. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Encouraging. Very surprised.
Just on, obviously, the two top dogs in town up there for the last decade or so, I know you guys get on really well, but I imagine there have been times when there's been fierce competition between you. How's the relationship been with Robbie Heathcote over the journey?
I'd be lying if I didn't say it wasn't up and down. We have our moments, that's for sure. So things get a bit testy. I mean, I guess we're both pretty big personalities as well, and we both like to win. So it's plenty of times where it gets a bit challenging for us both, but at the moment things are okay, so that's good.
Doesn't that relationship sort of make work a bit more interesting, Tony? Otherwise, you know, things can get a bit sort of monotonous. Sometimes you need a rival to spur you on.
Oh, sure. I mean, that's what's great about the game. I mean, every year it gets a bit stronger no matter what area you're in, whether you're in Melbourne, Sydney, or up here in Brisbane. It's sort of tough every year. There's always someone popping up, and Rob's a worthy adversary. That's for sure. He was top dog, I guess, before I sort of come down to Brisbane, and we've drilled along the whole way, and he pushed me into my limits, that's for sure. And
yeah, you were the Johnny come lately that wandered into town to upset the apple cart, so no wonder he got his nose out of joint. Hey, sometimes these things are best resolved on the racetrack, and this is a fascinating race, isn't it? Interesting, Tony, how, you know, we pay a lot of attention to the Golden Slipper and the Blue Diamond winners, but sometimes stars can emerge very late in the season, and I reckon that seems to be the case with Wild Ruler, Rothfire, Isotope, and Toby Edmonds is a really smart one as well, and it's all going to play out in the Atkins Stakes in a couple of weeks' time, but this is a lovely little clash between the Tony Gollan-trained Isotope and the Robert Heathcote-trained Rothfire in the Mowat and Shandon Race 6 tomorrow.
Yeah, look, I think Queensland have got some really nice two-year-olds this year, and we've seen a couple of them sort of before Christmas, then Rob's horse was before Christmas, then in the autumn, and Mike Gillies sort of come on the scene a bit later. It's a very intriguing race. Obviously, Snowden's horse as well brings good intrigue into the race also. So I guess, you know, we're going to see where they all sit tomorrow, particularly in the scheme of things as far as the JJ goes in a fortnight. I think tomorrow's race is crucial to who's going to be, who's sort of after tomorrow heading towards the JJ.
Tell us about your filly, Tony, on debut at Doomben. She led, she absolutely smashed them, 10-length victory. And then Sunshine Coast, she was able to take a sit in behind them in a small field, and she relaxed well, she came out, she chased them down, and she quickened. That must have given you some hope that she can really go to that next level with that versatility and where she can land in a run.
Yeah, it's true. You know, she's always sort of given me that feel of a really versatile filly. She's such a relaxed filly at home. You can sort of do whatever you want with her in track work. She's very pleasing filly to train. So, I mean, you're always hopeful that they're happy to take a sip, particularly after leading like she did in the maiden. And it was good to see her do that at the Sunshine Coast. The pleasing thing, I guess, out of both runs, that probably doesn't make her any faster, but the form out of both races has been outstanding. Plenty of horses have come out of that maiden and won where she absolutely gapped them. And the form out of the race at Sunshine Coast has been very good with them two horses crawling the racing town, I think 2 weeks ago. Over 1,100. So, form around is great. She's trained on, to my eye, and certainly very excited to get to the races tomorrow with her.
Don't want to put words in your mouth, but is she as good a filly as you've trained? Short course?
Yeah, look, I think so. Yeah, I think she is, yep. I don't think she's not a, you know, one-trick pony like a two-year-old either. I think she's a filly that could certainly train on as she gets older, as a three-year-old, and even a four-year-old. She's just a lovely filly.
Well, there you go. Cop that, Heathcote. Hey, now, crossing the road can be a dangerous thing, but it's a good thing usually when you go across to Eagle Farm, especially when you've got a horse like Vega One who's been screaming out for it. Just a quick one. Concern from Chris Waller, concern from Robert Heathcote about not necessarily how the farm will play tomorrow, but the ongoing story about how it will recover. And obviously it's had a bit of a history and a bit of a hiccup of late. What do you make of Eagle Farm at the moment?
Yeah, I'm not as in love with it as Rob is. He really enjoys Eagle Farm. I find it very horses for coursesy. I don't think every horse loves the surface. I think it's a different surface, same profile with that short couch grass on it. I do think some horses reserve themselves on that track, and I'm really hoping my filly doesn't tomorrow, that's for sure. But the track tomorrow, I'm sure they'll cut in a little bit. I've been cutting up in the gallops, which is unusual. So I'm very interested to see how it plays, and if it does wear a bit tomorrow, it's very hard for these sort of tracks to repair at this time of year. So it could be an issue going forward. But look, there's smarter guys than me there to look after this track and do what they need to do, and that's why they got it right.
Which one between your two in the Victory Stakes, Tony, Outback Barbie or Vega One? Which one's on top?
Well, it's funny. Outback Barbie's just got a terrible record at Eagle Farm, one reason or another. So she really gets her chance to try and break that tomorrow. She's going great with Vega One. He just loves Eagle Farm. He loves the surface. You know, I said it's awesome. That course. So
I'd probably just on the score of what he's done there in the past, I'd have to have him in front.
He does look like he's... I mean, we might be over sort of emphasising it, but he does look like he's looking for Eagle Farm.
Oh, definitely. You know, he's probably still just sharp enough for the 1,200 now, middle of the front row. Ever since we got that ballot free last summer, but I still think where he's drawn tomorrow, he's probably still fresh enough in the leg. He's got to be pretty close to the mark tomorrow to be winning in a fortnight anyway, and I think he is.
All right. Hey, Robert Heath gets a meek sort of character who doesn't like stretching out his neck and giving us a good thing on the day, but we know you're a much more courageous type of trainer than Robert Heathcote. Have you got a good thing for us?
Heathcote Christmas card, please.
I hope he doesn't podcast us, because I formerly had a good relationship with Rob.
I don't have a good thing, but I do really think that Vega One ticks a lot of boxes for me tomorrow. I think he also really likes Eagle Farm. I can see him just getting a really good run off a much better draw than what he got the other day at Doomben. I think whatever can beat him will be really earning their stripes.
What about the Gold Coast today, Tony? I noticed a horse that caught my eye. How Wonderful Life is. It's a filly with a fair bit of ability.
Yeah, I really like her and probably Advanced Warning Station. I've done two races down there, and I probably fancy my chances in both of them, to be honest, today. So I'll probably have How Wonderful Life Is. She's very good, fresh up in her preparation. She took on some very good trios, the short course. Before, no disrespect to what she's meeting today, but these are a step down from Sugar Boom and the other in type of horses, so she looks very well placed.
Hey, just a quick one before we let you go. Our relaxed sort of theme through coronavirus is that every guest we have nominates a song. Michael Sharkey's produced one from some industrial warehouse in New York. I don't know what the hell that was. Chris Waller's got his homework. Matty Kamani gave us a jazz number. Off the top of your head, have you got an automatic go-to favourite song for the next time we interview you?
I don't have like a go-to favourite song, but I'm just trying to do terms at the moment. A bit of country song. I'm pretty into
Lee Kernaghan type stuff.
Oh, he's a bit more new age than Lee
Kernaghan,
but no, Luke
Kern. All right, we've jotted it down. We'll find it. So next time we have you, the gentle introduction to the interview will be one of his tunes.
Sounds good to me.
Good on you, Tone.
Cheers, guys. Good weekend.
Country music, eh?
I had a feeling he would.
Yeah, good. You know what happens when you play country music backwards?
Isn't it?
Your dog comes back. Your wife comes back. You get your job back.
Oh, that is outstanding.
A week, try the veal.
Liam O'Keefe's going to join us shortly. Phil, are we taking a break? Are we going to... We are. And then the Flemington... This is an important interview with Liam O'Keefe because...
Very.
They've had a bit of weather at Royal Headquarters, so we'll get to the bottom of it after this. You're listening to Friday Form Focus with The Shark. It's 18 past nine.
Inside the weekend's biggest races, RSN 927's Racing Pulse and Friday Form Focus.
22 minutes past nine, Shark. There are so many interesting runners scattered across the Flemington program. Shepherd, Quay Quay, Sosi Bon, Rich Charms back and so on. But the asterisk hanging over the meeting is how it's going to play and just how wet it is after a wet week. And Liam O'Keefe joins you now.
G'day, Liam. I hope you're well. I hope things are on the improve out there at Flemington after some rain this week. And as we look out of the window here at Carlton, it's nice to see some blue sky poking through. Are we on the improve in terms of the track?
Yeah, morning, gents. It is pleasant to see a little bit of blue sky between the clouds. And, slowly improving. We're on a heavy eight as of this morning. We've had 6.2 mil the last 24 hours and a total of 41.4 mil for the last 72 hours. So if we can get a fine day today and a relatively clean day tomorrow, it will slowly improve.
It looks like the worst of the rain is well and truly behind us. Just a couple of mil in the next sort of 48 hours around Melbourne. That's going to help. What's your gut feel in terms of a final track reading tomorrow?
Yeah, it's certainly just going to depend on the rain tomorrow, Shark. We've got a fine day ahead today, and then tomorrow they are saying showers during the day. So if we do get consistent showers during the day, it'll probably soften again. But if we can get through it unscathed, it may improve a bit. So it's all going to come down to tomorrow. But as you said, the bulk of the rain has gone through. So fingers crossed we can get through relatively dry and be on that sort of improving heavy eight.
The rail's at 5 metres. What's the wear like across the track?
Yeah, the rail move came out 3 metres from last Saturday, so from 2 metres out to 5, that covers most of the wear and tear around the home turn. In the straight, there is some marking on that inside 4 metres, So given that it's rain affected marking, that will give way during the day. So I'd expect the jockeys to progressively move out towards the middle of the track as the day proceeds. And looking for fresh ground. And for the straight racing, I'd expect them to go middle to outside on that fresh ground.
Anything caught your eye around the traps this week? I know Better Kick ran well last week. I think the Spruik was right. I think he's a nice horse, but just wasn't able to get it done on debut. What do you like tomorrow?
Yeah, he did run well. He might just be looking for a little bit further, and it's good for Steve to have a handy horse there. And I don't want to put the Moslem on again, but I'll go for one of Chris Bowler's Yonkers in the first. Likes a wet track, and Craig Williams aboard, good barrier. Nice step up in distance, so we'll go for Yonkers.
Yonkers it is. Good on you, Liam.
Thanks, guys.
El Toro is the other one who's really, really significant tomorrow, and El Toro goes around as a hot favourite in race four. We're going to try and have a chat to Matt Laurie about him, and you did a really good story on RSN. I've told you to stop doing good stories on RSN.
Sure, I'll write some bad ones.
You've got a day. Hot favourite in race four, Matt Laurie might join us a bit later, but Peter, let's bounce the ball with, let's get into this program. We're going to get the narcs on social media having a crack again, so
good.
We better have a chat to Peter Gordon Moody, former champion trainer, now resurrecting his career, and he's the horse that thus far getting him out of the wilderness is a horse called Shepherd. That's a good name for a horse who guides
sort of
you out of trouble.
There, isn't it? Sort of in the wilderness and resurrections and things like that.
Well, Moods is a kind of a religious sort of guy, and he joins us. G'day, Moods.
Yeah, good on you, boys. How are you?
Very well. How's the hard slog going?
All good down here at Packet on the Swan. Got a little shower of rain, but enough to keep the dust in.
All right, Shepherd is the shop window at the moment for Peter Moody Racing, and goes around steps to the, what is it, Shark, 2,500 metres in the first at Flemington on a rain-affected track, Moods. How does that all add up to you?
Yeah, the rain-affected shouldn't worry him. 2,500 should suit him ideally. I think we went a mile and a half at Mornington back on the grand final day last year.
Yeah, that's right.
Seems an eternity to go, but he had nice grounding, a good gallop at Ballarat the other day. The leader ran them along, and because it was that good gallop, it gave him a nice, good, clean hit out for this. So he probably rolls forward to first four or five spot, and we'll make it a nice gallop again if they stop and start. He's a genuine stayer. He'll keep the gallop going,
That's a good thing about the opposition tomorrow, Pete. There's some horses there that like to get out and roll along. Old mate Sasko, number two, that's the sort of pattern that he enjoys. So he might have some company up there on the speed, which would be good, particularly if he had just something to sight until about the 300 to run past.
Yeah, for sure. But, good respect for, Cinder Win and good idea in those horses. They're seasoned, where my blokes, I think, off to the races for the eighth start. They're seasoned type horses that have had solid grounding and hard runs at these trips, where my bloke and I think probably the Waller horse and that, step up from, five, two and three and four furlongs from the last run. So they're going to be hard to beat. But I'm keen to give my bloke a spin on the big track at Flemington. He handles it soft, let's have a look at him and see where he sits in the food chain somewhat.
All right, any requirement is the single float, because one runner at Flemington. Anything else in the next day or so, Pete?
I've got my hurdle going around at Cranbourne tonight. Savvy Can, he won a hurdle trial last week. He has a spin in the 2,500 tonight. So, sometimes those horses, I think he's trialled at Warrnambool. And then at Cranbourne, since his last flat run, sometimes that can spark him up a bit. So fingers crossed and hope like hell there. And up at Ballarat Sunday, not the worst.
Moody left as Peter Moody 4 years ago, and he's come back as Jim Houlihan.
Yeah. A bit of that, isn't it?
Very creative.
Yeah.
Good on you, Pete. Good luck. Good luck at Flemington tomorrow.
Cheers, boys. Have a good day.
All right, as Shepherd, let's get on to it, Shark. The first is at 11:40 tomorrow, the Rogan Josh Stayers Trophy. These races are named in honour of the residents of living legends, those who had won races at Flemington. What do you make of Shep? Is he under the odds because of the Moody mystique, or is he about right?
No, I think he's about right. I think whether it's trained by Moody or somebody else, this is a young stayer that's got a good engine there. I had a chat to Luke Nolan during the week, and he said, look, he feels like he's going to be a group class horse, and most people would look at him and say, well, he's 4 years old, why hasn't he done it? But you forget that he's a Northern Hemisphere bred. He was bought as a weanling. He really is sort of that true 6 to 9 months behind maturity. So
he's the poor man's Russian Camelot.
He is a little bit. Yeah, he's probably not as fast or dynamic as Russian Camelot, but he'll definitely stay. I can see him, you know, probably being a Sydney Cap horse next year. Oh, I think that's
grinding away up the Randwick Straight.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If the track hangs around that soft 7, heavy 8 mark, he's probably the way I want to go. That heavy track win at Ballarat, the form's standing up really well out of that race. He beat Artie Lucas, who won during the week by about 4 lengths, and they really distanced the rest. It was a good 4 or 5 lengths to third in that race. So I think the form can be trusted. Nolan rides a couple of kilos off as he comes up a notch to this grade. And the wide gate, I don't think's any real consequence, because he will go forward, and there's horses like Sasko to sort of carry him forward from a middle to outside gate. If the track improves and it's on the better side of a soft 7, the horse that beat Shepherd at Geelong 2 runs ago, Starcaster, he is right there in contention. That Geelong win, he just had the better turn of foot. They walked, he had the best sprint. Interesting, in the UK, his best form has been out over 2,400 metres, and we haven't seen him at that trip yet in Australia. Forget the Lakeside run. It was a bog track. He got a mile back. He had to be sort of on speed near the fence. He was never a hope when they settled in that run. So they're the two I'm sort of landing on at first. Weather-dependent, track-dependent.
Starcaster and Shepherd. Interesting enough, some of the most interesting racing at Flemington is early in the day, and we go into race two, and, well, you can sort of imagine the thoughts going through the mind of Matt Kamani day after day as you count down to the return of a horse like Quay Quay. Like, is this the one? You know, is this a nice horse, or is this the one? And he certainly won like the one in the big shootout at Caulfield. Little freshen up. You would imagine everything is good getting to Flemington. Little horse still has to carry the 59.5, but he's going to go around about 6 to 4 in the old. What do you make of this one?
Sometimes these off-season two-year-old races, a horse that can be dominant, we all get carried away with and start thinking, oh, he's a Guinness horse, oh, he's this, oh, he's that. Often they let you down, but a horse like Prince of Sussex last year winning the showdown and now he's in Hong Kong, but I think he'll do a really good job up there. Quay Quay's probably in that same category. The way he won at Echuca told everyone he was above average. The market didn't expect it. He was $26 into 21. Again, at Caulfield, the market was against him. He was 11 out to 14, but he won like a horse that's probably listed Group 3 class, I'd say, or you know, could be that come the spring, and that's probably good enough to knock a race like this over. I'm in his corner firmly, despite the slight setback Matty was talking about, just that little knock on the leg that he missed the run in Adelaide. I don't think that's going to be a huge concern. He's already a soft 7 winner at Echuca. The form out of that race is good. He's in pretty well at the weights, really. Just a kilo and a half penalty for winning that good race, the showdown. I think he'll win.
I guess the little query is the map. And, you know, if people are wanting to take 6 to 4, do you think at 1,400 rain-affected ground, you know, he may be able to be within striking distance and not have everyone petrified that he's got too much to do?
I think so. And we sort of saw that in the showdown, didn't he? When he lobbed midfield and was able to hold a position there pretty comfortably. At his first run at Ballarat, he actually looked like he had speed out of the gates, and then they had to snag him back when he was caught wide. So I think there is some gate speed there that'll help offset the worry about him getting too far back in the field. And there should be okay speed. Indictment gets the blinkers for the first time. It should be handy. Immortal Love missed the start, but then gathered quickly and found speed at Echuca before it won there. I think there'll be enough speed to bring it into the race. Rock the Ring in the markets, you know, it looks like the danger, but I think at Sale it was probably flattered a little bit. They were coming down the middle of the track that day. He found that fast lane, got into that ground and won well. He may measure up. I'll just take a little bit of a risk on him. Quay Quay on top for me. I think Indictment is the danger.
All right. So the two profile horses, Shepherd and Quay Quay, for Shark in the first two races. Isn't it funny how people can form different impressions of something that's visually almost the same? And Richo on Get On, and I agree with him with Barbie's Fox. If you look at Quay Quay, was bang, flashing home and winning and lots of upside and so on. If Barbie's Fox had been something with a higher profile and had won like that, this is a horse that we're talking about that's 16 to 1. It's a wet tracker. If it comes out and wins at 16 to 1 just as impressively, people will be kicking themselves for not just reading the simple play on how impressive that win was first up.
But she had great form in the spring. She was a Group 2 place getter behind in the Tranquil Star when Acting controlled the race. Basically, if you weren't on speed, you were nowhere in that race. She sat off them and really finished well through the line. 1,000 guineas didn't go away. She was probably at the end of the prep. But the form around her is really solid. That first up win was huge. I can't believe she's the price she is.
I'm checking the price just in case she's trimmed because common sense has prevailed, but I'll have a look.
She does leap a little bit at the handicap. She was with Lewis Germer's claim. She was in around 56.5 last time. She's 2.5 kegs more this time around. But the competition is comparable. I think she's very hard to beat here. My top pick is La Chevalier. I think this horse should have won by a far better margin at Lakeside. She was up basically until the 175. Michael Poy got off heels. It looked like Florent and Top Pins were going to fight the race out. All of a sudden, La Chevalier got into gear and just surged past them. She was going away from them on the line. I think this horse is airborne at the moment. And again, you're getting a decent price about her away from the favourite. I think she is the horse to beat. She's my top pick, number eight. Barbie's Fox is the gross overs in the race.
$13, Barbie's Fox. Yep. So the overs are still...
Should be single figures.
The overs are still gross. They were gross yesterday and they're gross today.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's funny, isn't it, how a lot of us are feeling the same way, but the market hasn't shifted. So either the market's right or we're right. Mm. We'll see what happens. Let's go to race four and then we might take a break. We've got to catch up with Quinny about the... all the betting activity across Australia, but the fourth, the Almandon.
Almandon, it's a sprint race.
I heard Simon Marshall get on, someone said, the Almandon 1100, and Marshall goes, "Hey, Almandon at 1100? Anyway, they've got to attach a horse to a race, and that's what they've done here.
Is there Tom Melbourne for all the nonnies on the day?
Yeah. The shirkers. All right, this one looks a lot more open. We do have, actually, no, I'm wrong. It is not more open. There is a red-hot resurrected superstar in this race called Alpha Oro.
Yes, there is. Back from a broken leg, back from steel plates and screws in its leg. Matt Laurie's done a fantastic job with his horse. And to get it back to a racetrack, let alone running a track record at its last start.
Yeah, and for those who want to read more about that, you've done a lovely piece talking to Matt Laurie about the battle to save Alpha Oro and then the career as it is now. And what a hack canter job it was last start.
Yeah, just smashed them at Pakenham. On the synthetic, had done that on the turf the start before. He's kept the horse to big tracks, which I think might be something as well, just to keep it away from those tight turns perhaps at other venues and let the horse balance up and finish off. He's got great natural speed. I know Matt thought it would be a group horse as a younger horse. Maybe he's still got some hope to get back to that level as a four-year-old rising five.
It's funny you mentioned Prince of Sussex as well. Matt Laurie trained it. I wonder what the update is there and whether the resurrection of Alpha Oro has helped ease the heartache of losing Prince of Sussex. Matty Laurie joins us. How are you, Matt?
Good, guys. How are you?
Good. Just reading Shark's story, trainers do develop attachments to certain horses for certain reasons, and you must have a soft spot for Alpha Oro for what you've both been through together.
Yeah, look, his first run back, I had a bit of a tear in my eye, after running second there at Pakenham, so look, it was good to have him back, and, and more importantly, he's come through all his runs really well to date, so, it's going to be interesting to watch him develop.
You've kept him to big tracks up until this point in his career, Matt. Is there anything to that, or is it just the way that the pattern's fallen for him? And how do you think he'll be in a straight line?
No, look, we haven't avoided any sort of other tracks. It's just sort of worked out that way. But, I think he's very professional. He's like very, very happy to sort of... gallop along in front. He just seems the horse that gets into a zone. We think he'll handle the track, the straight line, but, you never can, too confident, but, he seems seems to be in the right frame of mind, and he's obviously racing particularly well.
For horses come off what he has, is there something attractive about the simplicity of drawn out running in a straight line, no traffic? Is it sort of an appealing prospect tomorrow, this scenario?
Look, this thing at Caulfield probably would lean towards, going around a bend, this was what was available and most suitable. I think he'll be fine on it. Look, you know, we've obviously missed out on, you know, sort of this two-year-old and sort of three-year-old racing, and now we've just got an opportunity to take him through his grades.
Where to from tomorrow, Matt? I know with a horse like this, you probably just, you know, race to race, but if he comes out and wins really well, do you put him away? Do you freshen him for say, you know, a Monash Stakes sort of prep early in the spring, late in this season, or do you pull up and have a look at something a little better during the carnival?
Well, I'd love to have an opportunity to race him in some smart race, but time.
Matty, can you swivel back to where you were? Your phone is on the outski here.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's much better, mate. Go.
I was just saying he's 72 rating, so you know, really just have to try and place him well and build up.
No good. Mate, I think we've got enough info there anyway. Thanks for that, but his phone is a bit in and out, so we'll leave it there with Matt Laurie, but we do appreciate his time. Shark, how does it all add up? I personally like the, you know, those horses have come off issues. Running in a straight line helps them go through their gears. Ben Mellum's a very good nurser with these sort of horses through their gears. So
Very hard to beat. Alpha Road draws the right part of the track, I think, too. You'd want to be near that sort of grandstand or outside part. It seems to be the place to be. It's just the price that's pulling me up. Knowing the horse's history, do I want to tumble into him at $2.20 or around that price? Probably not. I think he'll be very hard to beat, but from a betting perspective, I'm sort of drawn more to number 8, Ruben Blur, as an each-way option. I thought his first up run at Lakeside was very good. Poked through on the inside. He sat a lot closer to the speed than he has done in previous first up runs. Was riding the leader's backs. Gap came. He quickened through like he was going to win. But I think first up on a really heavy track, it was a heavy 9 that day, might have just sapped him a little bit, that last 150. Second up form was very good. He's won by 4.5 lengths past preparation second up.
The stable was
down the straight.
The stable was adamant he was underdone first up too,
yeah.
So bounce off that. I think I was just checking the stats, but from memory, hasn't he got a really good straight record?
Yeah, he beat Jumbo Ozaki down the straight one day, and he looked very good doing it. He was last in the race that day, came around them and just whipped down and then put Jumbo Ozaki away like it was nailed to the wall. I think this might be a little target race for Ruben Blur, and he's in his right grade. A 78, I think, is perfect for him, and the little claim there for Lockie King gets him in well at the weights. At the price only, I've got him ahead of Alpha Oro.
Okay, all right. A little bit of value there, and that's early quality stuff. Last leg of the first quality is race 5. We'll get this out of the way, then we'll take a break, and we'll get an update from Quinny at the tab and all the market moves around Australia. This is the last leg, race 5, of the early quad, if you're an early quad taker. It's over 2,000 metres, and this looks open. We've had a few sharp, short favourites early on, but this looks like an opportunity for some value here. Have you found any?
Yeah, I think Tiriton can win. He was drawn in last time and had to wait for runs, got held up, lost all momentum, then had to take a really tight run back on the inside. The horse that was sitting outside I can't quite remember, it was a Paul Pariska-trained horse, but he's quite a big lump of a thing, and he had to wait for that big horse just to give him a little bit of a gap to poke through. When he did, he surged through and quickened well, but the momentum was with another horse, and that was He's a Fox, who was able to win. Almost a switch of the runs this time. He's a Fox has drawn one. Tiriton draws a bit wider. I think it gives Tiriton and Jai McNeil the opportunity to flow into the race when McNeil wants. There's a fair few in this race that are, I think, just treading water without really thumping the line. Tiriton gets his chance to win this. I really do think he's ready to win. Translator number 9 would be a danger. Gamekeeper's flying the toppy, 62 kilos without a claim on a really wet track. I'm just banking on that pulling him up a little bit.
All right, Tiriton it is. Halfway to Grantville.
Halfway to Grantville. Yeah, exactly. Good pie shop at Tiriton.
A quarter of the way to Wilson's Prom.
They do this thing called a ploughman's wheel, which is like a big fat, like almost a pizzery type of scenario, but it's got everything on it, everything.
Oh.
And you get one of those and stick it in the oven, Matthew, and your day is made.
Oh, excellent stuff. It doesn't take much to distract us from our core mission, does it?
A shiny light distracts me. Like, you start talking about food, I'm gone.
Oh, it reminds me. I'm like my oldest son, Ollie. He, when he used to play footy, I'm sorry, Ollie, I'm about to dob you in here. All the other kids were facing the one way and looking at the ball, and he was always facing the other way looking at aeroplanes.
Right.
Yes, yes, yes. Interesting character. Hey, it's 18 minutes to 10. We're going to take a short break. Quinny's going to join us, and then we're going to plough our... No, we're not going to plough through. We're going to charge through the quaddie.
Inside the weekend's biggest races, RSN 927's Racing Pulse and Friday Form Focus.
11 minutes to 10, we've got the quaddie to go. My mate Benny McGee has texted me and declared Miss Ayano shark, and I also like Miss Ayano. It was a tragedy she didn't run a place in my place parlay at Warrnambool, and I think tomorrow might be the day, unless you disagree. You do disagree.
I do, to a degree. I think she's in the game.
You disagree to a degree.
I disagree to a degree. Yeah, degrees of disagreement. Haunted is the way I'm going.
We're being distracted again.
We are.
Stick to the script. Haunted.
I'm forgiving its failure in that listed 1400 in Adelaide. I just thought he was on speed with weight. I think the handicapper got to him last time. Back to this standard, down the straight, where he ran really well behind Fabergino 3 starts ago. I love that run. And I thought he was excellent in the Hariba too. I just think he can come, but he's too consistent not to return to that sort of level. I think the Adelaide run was out of character, to say the least, for Haunted. Inside gate may not be ideal. Damien Oliver is. Great each way chance.
All right.
On top for me.
Big race, isn't it? Home of the Brave is a big name horse who's trialled well, Malibu style, Rich Charm, big name horses. So it's a really good race, but it's a matter of whether those big names are actually in good enough form to win. So I think
that's
you've
true.
Identified one who might just be ripe to go.
Tricky first leg of the quaddie too, I think. You probably need a handful of them here.
You got to put Miss Ayano in the quaddie.
Look, I didn't have her in initially, but I'll put her in for you. How's that?
You don't want to upset Benny McGee, who's tipped it to me.
Benny McGee? No, I don't want to upset him. I don't know who he is.
Volatile type.
Is he a volatile type?
Yep. Okay. Football circles.
Is it? Ooh, really?
Yeah. Elbows.
Okay.
All right. Take note.
Righty.
All right. Race seven, let's focus. Shark, focus. Form focus. 1,800 metres, race seven. Another good race. Gee, I know we say it all the time, but headquarters, winter, gee, not really off-season to me, and this is another really interesting one, and I think it's one where we might be able to search for a bit of quaddie value.
Yeah, it might be. I'm going to be a bit brave here and sort of trim up to, I reckon, 3 or 4, I think, will get us through, and I'm extending it out to the two at the top, the two Waller horses. Massaf, who's got really good staying form in Europe, particularly in Ireland, and Nobu, who's just desperate for better ground than what he's been on. Heavy tracks at his last two. If the track gets on the better side of a soft seven, I think Nobu can win the race. He gets blinkers. He was cut out for a run, just couldn't take it quick enough at Caulfield. And Aussie Nugget, the horse who I've got on top, he was just too swift there, taking that run. He had the momentum up, was going around horses, and Nobu and Craig Williams tried to angle out and come underneath him. It didn't quite work. Aussie Nugget, he's no star, but at this grade, I think he's really well placed. He's more than capable of winning his way out of benchmark 84 grade in town in the off-season. Wet track's no issue. Gate 6 means that John McNeil can have him just midfield or just a touch off midfield. He doesn't have to get a long way back. And he was shuffled back at Caulfield in a slow run race that probably cost him winning. Sectionals were good late. He is on top for me.
Right. So, look, I'll get you to extrapolate when we review and we'll look at our quaddies and numbers and
how
much we have to sort of shuffle around. And which brings us to race 8 and the question of, do you look at what's in front of you or do you think of the horse and then question yourself? And I'm talking about Sosibon. Bang, bang, 2 in a row. No reason why I can't run win 3 in a row except for the one simple fact.
He is who he is. Yeah, and I think the handicapper as well has probably got a hold of him now. He's up again at the handicap off that last start when he's going to carry 61 on a wet track. I think he's going too well not to run well. But I probably am looking at Sosibon thinking he's in that third, fourth, fifth, running on, looming up, running on, but a horse with a lighter weight might get the better of him.
And he's most effective with the lighter weight too, isn't he? I think if you look through his career, when he sneaks down a bit, that's when he's most lethal. But he does get the 2 kilo claim, but I hear what you're saying, because he's not a robust horse.
No. And he's not the best horse in this race either. He has to give weight to the best horse in the race, and that's Django Freeman.
Yep.
Who is a very talented horse. The Lucario form line through Germany, that was probably the best German derby I've seen for a few years. It was a flint-hard track. They ran well. They ran good time. Look, it's a good form line. And listening to Rob Hickmott earlier in the week, the horse broke 22 its last 400 in that gallop at Sandown. That tells me he's ready. The jump out at Caulfield a month or so ago, he did enough there. It was an 800-metre jump out. He was last. He tagged along behind him. He wasn't asked to do much. He looked comfortable. He looked fluent in his action. That's all you can hope for. He's well and truly good enough to win this. First up, 1,600. Wet track would be the slight query because he hasn't seen this sort of ground before, but they work on quite wet ground in Germany, and he's always been a horse that's been pretty firm in the markets when he's gone around, so they've known about him for a while that he's a better than average talent. He's the top pick for me. Shot of Irish, really smart claim. Talia Hope, she's just going to have to judge the pace and work out where you need to be in that home straight. So there'll be some track walking with Pat Payne, I would have thought, before this race, just to say, okay, you don't want to be hard on the rail. Maybe you want to drift out on the corner. And he's flying.
And eats mud.
Eats it. His mudder was a mudder.
Don't. You're getting distracted again. Now, I just want to see the fluctuations on your top selection.
Django. There's been some money for him.
755. So the market's sort of in your corner a bit, because there is a bit of mystery about how he translates to here, but if the market's there, then it's encouraging. All right, so Django on top. Can I just throw one at you? Mr. Marathon, if there's a roughie, is Mr. Marathon Man a sneaky improver?
Yeah, he should be ready to really smack the line now. Two runs at 1,200. I thought the first up run to Order of Command was good. Wongoon run, he was doing some good late work, but the race was all over. He was just starting to find his stride and find the line. He's another one that could run really well at a price here.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get your expanded numbers there when we review. What about race nine?
Race nine.
1,100 metres up the straight.
Yeah, and there's one at odds here towards the $12 or $13 mark that I think's been ignored by the market. That's Samals. She's a real talent, and she should probably have won three of her four starts. Her first two wins came off really good jump outs. She surprised the market at her first up. She didn't the second time at Mooney Valley. That there was a lot of support for her. Just a bit unlucky. Had to wait for a run. It came. She quickened. Won the race. It was a really good effort. Then she covered a heap of ground wide outside the leader, and that took it out of her. And her last run before a break was forgivable. Jump outs have been great again. She's running time at the jump outs. Soft track's the only query. She hasn't seen it, so we don't know. But at $13, I'm happy to play each way to find out. Hilo, three wide Sydney last time, didn't help him. We know he's a quality sort of Group 3 horse at his best, and he's shown that this prep. And the astrologist, who had a long break before really thumping the line at Caulfield, probably would have wanted 1,200, talking to Calvin McAvoy during the week. They would have appreciated just that extra 100 metres. Do you like that?
Emphasis on the Vin bit too. You really emphasised it's not Cal, didn't you?
Maybe we'll go with Vinny over time.
If he doesn't accept Cal, how do you think he's going to go with Vinny?
Well, if he keeps wearing gold chains, he's kind of more that Vinny-type character, isn't he?
Barbarino.
Yeah.
Okay. Just be careful, because you know this is a, you know.
Lucky he's got a sense of humour.
Yes.
He's in the race as well, the astrologist. But, yeah, keen on Samals each way. I think she's one of the better each way bets, you know, spec bets at an each way price on the day.
Number 12. Now, A, are you a quaddy taker? And B, if you are, do you work out whether the early quaddy looks nicer or the later quaddy, or you automatically gravitate to the later quaddy?
Probably the later one, because I can work out what the kids are doing and get some air time to actually concentrate on race day.
And track pattern as well?
Track pattern as well. I've found myself in numerous quaddy clubs over this isolation period. So, yeah, we have been having a bit of a flight, the quaddies, in recent weeks with varying degrees of success, depending on who's in the chair.
Because the early quaddy looks to have more assured skinny legs.
Yeah, it does. So. Well, I'm fairly confident we'll be able to be somewhere near it with the late quaddy.
All right.
Let's run with that.
Okay. So race six is the first leg of the latey.
Yeah.
And this is up the straight, and this is the race that we've discussed with, you know, home with all these big names, and you did go for Haunted. You want to get it, so how far do you have to go?
2, 5, 6, and 7 were my numbers, but for Basher McGee, I'll throw in number 10, Missiano, as well.
And the other thing, too, is if it wins, you now put it in, we will never hear the end of it.
That's right. So. Yeah, so correct.
You got to think of those things.
Yes.
Okay, so 2, 5, 6, 7, 10 for for Mr. McGee. Over to race 7. This is 1,800 metres. So how wide do we absolutely have to go here?
1, 2, 10 and 15, I think, covers you.
1, 2, 10 and 15.
Mm-hmm.
And he did get in Duke of Plumpton, I'm imagining, mm-hmm. there. So, yes. All right, now, race 8, the Sosibon. What are we doing here?
Brave here. 4, Reykjavik.
Reykjavik.
5, Django Friedman and 13, Shot of Irish.
Yep. Yeah. Base is covered. I'm going to suggest people might want to throw in Mr. Marathon Man just in case.
Yeah.
And the last.
A bit wider here in the last. Again, we don't know scratchings or anything like that because I give both the emergencies a really good chance. Master Montara and Lombardo.
Yep.
1, 2, 7, 11, 12 and 15, 16 if they get a run.
Actually, speaking of interesting runners, obviously Master Montara is interesting. Formerly Richard Lemming.
Yeah.
Massive amount of money for the Hayes camp to purchase. You wonder whether it might end up in Hong Kong with David's move and so on.
They've got to qualify him and get his rating up, but he should be there.
What's going to catch your eye? I think Canaan, but is there anything else interstate that you're homing in on?
No, I'm keen on Canaan. I want to see how he goes there. I'll play relatively early at Flemington. I'm going to back Le Chevalier in race 3. Hope we can get something there to have a crack at Canaan. And then Aussie Nugget if we're still in front.
Terrific.
We'll play around those, Matty, but I'll be out of reception tomorrow. I'll be trout fishing on Lake Dartmouth, so with the Panda and Big D. So I've got
set up near Mitter.
It is, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Up north.
Yeah.
You are a bit of a reclusive type.
Mm. I'm getting text messages while we're sitting here. Big D's already on the river. He's already broken a rod, so not good there. So we've got to stop at BCF now, the Panda.
Did Big Knee snap it across his knee when he didn't get a bite?
I don't know what happened, but yeah, it looks like troubled times.
Bit wary about Big D, to be honest with you. Hey, good on you, mate. Well, you have a lovely time, and hopefully you get your quaddies on early before you get out of reception, and we're having a really, really nice conversation about all our winners on Monday.
Absolutely.
Good on you, Shark. That's the Shark Sports news update coming up with John J. Bowden, and then Mark Guest will go through the stall meeting today and Ray Huxley, Cranbourne tonight.